I'm just going to say a few words about Corinne Doria before I hand over to her for her talk presentation. She is lecturer in history and general education at the Chinese University of Hong Kong in Shenzhen. Between 2019 and 2021, Corinne Doria taught modern history and history of medicine at the École des Hautes Études at the Tsumen University. Between 2014 and 2018, she was a guest lecturer at the Sorbonne and Sciences Po in Paris. In 2019, she worked as a researcher at the Italian High Studies Institution in America, University of Columbia, and then in Munich. She is specialized in the history of ophthalmology and history of visual impairment. She has published 4 books and several chapters on the history of sight. And today, Corinne is going to be talking to us about Defining Blindness, an Invitation to a Critical Understanding of Visual Impairment. Corinne, over to you. Thank you again, Marion, for this presentation. Thank you to Vanessa and Hannah for the organization of this conference, and to all of you who have been working on this during these long days of work that you've been putting in to enable everything to go well and so that everything can happen without problems. I was very touched when I learned that I was the first opening lecturer for this conference, and I would like to ask your forgiveness in advance. I have a small cold. I hope it won't disturb things too much as we work together, and won't disturb the interpreters. My French is my working language. I won't be presenting pictures during my talk, but I will try to describe things as accurately as possible in terms of objects and the examples of things that I will be talking about during my lecture. As Marion announced, my lecture today is going to be talking about defining blindness. It's an invitation to think through the way that blindness or visual impairment was defined over history in the sense that we give the visual impairment today. This is a question that is a core question for anybody interested in disability studies, particularly in terms of blindness. My work, as Marion has already said, is mainly in the area of the history of ophthalmology and visual impairment. And during my talk, I will be, and the discussions afterwards, I will be talking about the way that visual impairment has been defined by doctors over the second half of the 20th century. This seems to be the best approach to help us think through defining visual impairment and blindness. During my talk, I will be mainly touching on the following points. I will say a few introductory words about where ophthalmology has been, the point to which we have arrived, and the revolution during the second half of the 19th century, and the revolution in terms of the knowledge regarding vision and the organization of the profession of doctors specializing in the physiology of the eye, and then the question of measuring visual the function, visual function, and the question of defining what is a normal eye and normal vision. Then I will go through the details of the problem issues and the desire to give a scientific and quantitative definition to sight have led to, particularly in terms of the definition. And I will conclude with a series of open questions or thoughts regarding the definition of blindness, inspired by the difficulties and the current debates that followed the attempts to give accurate definition to normal vision. So I'm going to start by giving a few ideas, a few elements about the revolution in knowledge, in ophthalmological knowledge during the 19th century, particularly after the 1850s, and in terms of the organization of the medical profession, working on eye diseases. The 19th century, and the second half particularly, represents a turning point in the knowledge, in terms of the knowledge of the eye and the way it functions. Following a series of inventions or discoveries that for the first time in history allowed us to access the inside of a living eye. For many centuries, the knowledge of the eye and the way it functioned were limited because of the impossibility of accessing, of observing the inside of an eye, that of a living person. So knowledge, anatomical knowledge, the knowledge that doctors had was fairly accurate, but in terms of the way sight worked, knowledge was not very advanced. It is true that the work carried out by, for example, Descartes, Kepler, regarding the physiology of vision, were published well before that time, the 19th century. They had provided science with elements, absolutely core elements in the understanding of the visual functioning. But those studies had not managed to enter into university studies, where medical university studies. During the 19th century, particularly, more accurately, in 1851, the Prussian doctor she has just mentioned presented to the scientific community with the ophthalmoscope, an instrument that he had invented largely by accident, allowing him to see inside an eye, a living eye, allowing him to see what happened inside the, particularly in the rear part of the eye. This was a fundamental discovery because for the first time, doctors could see how a living eye was functioning and could describe in a precise way, and they could access the different parts of the eye, particularly with the different functions, and describe them. Another invention, also by Helmholtz, but that was a perfection by Javal, a French doctor, the ophthalmètre, allowed for a measurement of the movement of the crystal in the eye. That allowed us to acquire accurate knowledge about the physiology of vision. The use of these tools, of these equipment, helped doctors acquire precise knowledge about the way the eye works in a scientific way, defining it in a scientific way. This is a phenomenon of refraction. And during the second half of the 19th century, eye surgery underwent some significant advances, firstly due to the new knowledge with these new instruments, but also thanks to the introduction and the systematic use of protocols, of aseptic protocols and anesthetics. Then, during the second half of the 19th century, ophthalmology became a medical specialty in its own right, where ophthalmology professorships were being created in the universities of Europe and North America. In specialized clinics were founded regarding dealing with eye disease. They were created. A specialized press was started being published where doctors working on ocular pathologies could publish their findings, and professional organizations specializing in the treatment of eye pathologies were set up conferences were regularly organized at national and international levels. One of the points of interest, one of the questions that was a pressing interest for the specialists in this area of eye pathologies, specialists of the eye and its functioning, is the question of how to measure the visual acuity capacity. At the time, it was something that was considered indispensable in order to define the features of the eye and normal vision. And among the instruments that were created in order to do this, in order to measure this visual acuity, were the tables of visual acuity. After the 1850s, different visual acuity tables were published and began to be used by doctors who could test, thanks to their instruments, the vision of patients. Among the most famous is the one that was designed by Hermann Knell in 1862, and that quickly became the international method for measuring the vision of patients. It is a table on which letters of the alphabet, a Latin alphabet, are in capital letters, capital font, in a decreasing size. From the largest letter to the smallest letters that could be used, that should be looked at by a patient at a certain distance of 5 meters. Another table that was used widely by doctors at that time was designed by the French doctor Ferdinand Monnoyer, who published two different versions of his table chart to be used at a distance of 3 meters for the one and at a distance of 5 meters for the other. These charts contain the Latin alphabet letters, but their disposition is reversed compared to the earlier one, because the biggest letters were at the bottom of the chart and the smaller ones were in the upper part of the chart. But many other charts were designed by doctors using typical objects, different typical objects. Figures in different sizes or geometrical shapes in order to test the vision of patients. Also, charts to measure the capacity to read were set up, were designed, and started to become increasingly used for medical examinations of vision. These charts were considered as the modern methods of measuring visual acuity. But this was an operation that was carried out well before the 19th century attempts were made. We have read testimonies of that talk prove that during the ancient times, people tried to test visual acuity by referring to the stars. So if someone could distinguish two different stars, she's just quoted two different stars in the constellation, in a certain constellation, that would be considered as a very good sight, visual acuity. But methods, these were empirical methods of defining visual acuity that lacked the scientific character of modern visual charts, which in their intention, in the intention of their designers, these were scientific concepts that were created to quantify human vision in order to express it in the universal language of mathematics. They allow for a quantification of human vision to 20th, 10th, or 10th. These are instruments that provide results for studies and experimentation or material aspects of objects chosen following rigorous procedures. The type of object that could be represented, letters instead of figures, or a geometric object or shapes, their size, their thickness, the distance between the objects, the progression between the different objects, the type of paper used to represent them, the intensity and type of light that needs to be used during these examinations, and the time required for the test, for the sight test. These are instruments that were created to be reliable and able to provide results and provide quantitative results. At the same time, eye doctors started to define the characteristics of the eye and of normal eye and normal vision, a definition that quickly became adopted by the textbooks that medical students would use to study. And this was carried out by Doldes, a Dutch doctor. I will read the translation French of the definition that is found in his text. Anomalies of refraction of the eye, published in London in 1864. As for refraction, we call the structure of the normal eye when the rays emitted by faraway objects are brought to a point on the inside layer of the eye, when in parallel rays meet. Much more accurate definition. In the context, this is the exact definition that was used by eye doctors, still used by eye doctors today. When the rays actually reach the retina, we consider that we have a normal vision. Whereas when that is not the case, and the light rays meet before or after the retina, behind the retina, this is considered as a visual problem. As Donders defines, eyes that do not correspond to his definition are ametrop. According to the same logic that helped us define the characteristics of a normal eye, the characteristics of an abnormal eye also had its scientific definition. So the conditions that we knew from ancient times, like a short-sightedness or long-sightedness, become scientific, acquired scientific definitions that were accepted, adopted by the scientific medical community. Furthermore, the issues linked to refraction became the object of specialist doctors' interests, led to a medicalization, we could say, of glasses, of sight correction glasses. Objects that were invented during the Middle Ages, but existed for many centuries outside of the medical field. But then doctors were very suspicious of eyeglasses. Suspicious of crafted objects made by people who had no formal education and could not really solve the visual problem, because they work more or less like a crutch that can help someone walk who has a broken leg, but they do not do anything to repair the leg. So eyeglasses can help people see better. Someone whose eyes are defective but the scientific understanding of the physiology of the eye required a scientific discourse based. And the scientific understanding of the mechanisms of refraction and the irregularities of refraction started to be part of a medical discourse that became the object of medical.
The problem, which is quite immediate now, we can say, for the doctors, is the fact that the definition of the normal eye of impaired eye from the physiological point of view, does not relate to what doctors can observe with their patients, because the normal high as it is being defined by the doctors on the basis of the observation of the high physiology does not correspond to the actual reality. The doctors observe that most people have an eye which does not relate to the definition of what the ametric eye should be. The same dynamism exists for the definition of the visual acuity. In 1863, a definition was given for normal visual acuity so as to define the degree as a relationship between the distance of an object to the angle of 5 minutes. According to the computation, the objects can be recognized by the normal eye. And Snell defined visual acuity so as the ability to distinguish these objects at a given distance. The problem is that most people who are tested with visual tables have a vision that does not relate to what should be the normal visual acuity. For instance, most young people are able to read at a greater distance than what is expected, whereas most adults, especially those who live in cities, cannot read at that distance. So what the doctors have realized pretty quickly is that the definition given for a normal eye or of the said normal acuity does not correspond to the reality, which is a problem because ophthalmology is not something to be dealt with only at the academic level, but it has concrete practical examples for most people. In the meantime, the quantification and the measurements are being done so as to devise the characteristics of the eye, and that is instrumental for ophthalmologists, for eye specialists. And that is important for the social recognition. For centuries, eye specialists had a bad reputation. And for centuries, the so-called eye specialists were operating on eye cataracts, a type of operation with a success rate which was a disaster. And most of the time, and for centuries, doctors, and especially eye specialists, were being considered as not being, reliable. They were not deemed to be reliable. Doctors were supposed to be able to treat all type of medical problems at the time. But with regards to that gap that exists between science and reality and the importance of the ophthalmologist's gift to the research of a precise definition, and debates took place, and among specialists, these debates were very intense during the second part of the 19th century and beyond. For example, the issue of what is a visual act? What does that mean? A debate took place to place a debate that exists. Some doctors think it is relevant to use tables, charters with letters, but some others think it is more relevant to being able to recognize shape. Geometrics. They think the latter, recognizing a shape, has to do with cognition, rather than reading a letter or being able to count a number of figures, is considered as a visual act or a visual action. But generally speaking, the fact that people use charts to test a patient's sight, even if this is done very carefully, it was a default solution used by doctors who would have preferred to use instruments or machines, specialized machines, so as to have objective measurement of the visual abilities of a patient without the need of questioning the patient. For centuries, hundreds of ophthalmoscopes, eye devices were devised, patented to measure the visual acuity in a very precise manner. So many instruments were devised, manufactured, and that can be explained for several reasons. It was difficult to come up and to use a dedicated and useful precise tool so as to test visual acuity. But secondly, doctors were obsessed by the fact they had to have such a tool. Another issue is the matter of standards, international standards especially, so as to measure visual acuity, and having standardized charters, tables that are being recognized widely to a global level, type of units being used are important as well. Dozens of conferences have been held and are being organized on a regular basis to discuss these issues. One of the most important ones took place in Lucerne, in Switzerland, in 1904, and later in Naples, in Italy. The participants to this colloquium were able to establish trade-offs, compromises at that time. But the standards defined by this Congress are not being used in the real world, actually. They remain academic tools and measurements. Eye specialists are not the only one to have the need to test patients' sight, for instance. In the different states have that need. The armies do have these need as well. Armies need to test the sight of the soldiers, and the standards decided and used by individual states are not necessarily those used in other states. The same principle applies for trades such as people working in the railways, for which it was necessary to benefit for a certain degree of visual acuity, of course. And practical measures were being used by the people in that trade, and the people in those trade ignore the international standards defined by these eye specialists. This history, the definition of the normal eye, definition of the visual sight or visual acuity, and the quantification of sight tells us that it was the will, the wish of a number of professionals to set up a framework for standards, a framework of norms that remained very subjective and that was not widely used. So lots of people rejected that system. That history also represents an example of the domestication of the senses, which took place in the 19th century, so as to improve the performances of people who were faced with new demands, demands created by the Industrial Revolution. I talked about the rail services, but also I could think about compulsory and free primary education for pupils, which was introduced in many states. And of course, for that purpose, young school children had their eyes and sight tested so that they could read. And it is the same in the different armies, forces. Since there is no international recognized standards, proves that the debates remains very important nowadays. That leads us to a reflection about the definition of blindness. The visual impairment and the definition of visual impairment and blindness as it was defined by doctors in the 19th century continues to be a matter of discussion and can still be challenged. And this remains an issue because the question, the issue of, if we look at the definition of the associations of the World Health Organization definition of blindness, a distinction is being made between full blindness and legal blindness. Blindness is defined as a state described very precisely, and there is, according to that definition, not only one type of blindness, but several blindness states. But some people can keep given visual acuity, but can suffer from other impairment or disorders. And people can suffer from other conditions which have nothing to do with visual acuity. And all these definitions are not taken to, well, these definitions do not take into consideration the subjectivity of blindness, which makes that the people if we consider two people who have a similar sight characteristics, can live in very different ways because of a series of elements, of series of criteria which are different, i.e. their environment, for instance, their lifestyle, the people living with them, their friends, their work, their habits, psychology, and so on. So vision, such as blindness, are matters. For which the role of the doctors, the experts, medical experts, is instrumental. And within the framework of disabilities studies, and especially those pertaining to blindness, I think it is necessary to do some benchmarking work, really, to create basis, so to speak, to define blindness, to define blindness in a way. How could I say that? What is shared by scholars, research fellows, academics who have an interest in this part of disability studies, so to agree on definition of this condition. Thank you very much for your attention. And I am now ready to answer any question you may have. Thank you. Thank you very much, Corinne. It was very interesting indeed. So that is fine with you. For a few minutes, we shall talk. Just between us, and then I shall leave the floor to Anna, and we shall have a Q&A session, question and answer session. I think that your conference introduces very well this 2 days colloquium, because you talked about really the beginning, the historization, providing the history of this matter, what seems obvious to us now, i.e. the definition of blindness and visual impairment, and it is, of course, necessary to define this. So you do show that this definition in terms of visual acuity that can be quantified is recent, that it originates from the second part of the European 19th century, and it is closely related to the invention of measurement tools such as the ophthalmoscope. And it depends also on this definition of a so-called normal sight, normal eye. You also show that the determination of normal eye and normal vision, if I understood rightly, led to the fact that anything that did not comply with that definition was considered as a pathology or a disorder, which was not necessarily the case previously. So therefore, that led to a pathologization of this type of sites, hence leading to the phrase or expression visual impairment. And if I'm not mistaken, blindness today is considered as a disease. And then, what could I say? Yes, the fact that this pathologization leads to the idea of correction, norms of standards of healing thanks to surgery or glasses, by means of glasses. But I mean, the normal eye defined in the second part of the 19th century is not a real eye. The real eye was built on the laws of reflections of physics. And the ophthalmologist on that basis then used the standard of the average eye, not the ideal eye. You see that the youngest people had not a normal eye towards the higher part of the eye. He also highlighted difficulties experienced by people who want to quantify the vision, the fact that seeing is not only a matter of sensing, it's also about the creation of thought. You talked about the tables, visual tables, and you use terms close to that used by Michel Foucault, the resistance of the vision, which can be corrected. So this is how I could summarize your speech. Would like now to give some time to the audience to raise any questions. We have three questions in our colloquium, three main questions, of course. So Ash will ask one question and then I will give the floor to Anna. So the question will be, so to comment to the end of your speech and the idea according to which definition of blindness is not limitative, but we need a rich definition going beyond the current framework, which could be the basis on the blindness studies. Amongst the three key questions we do have in this colloquium, there is that one. What definition of blindness does your research lead you to adopt? And let me precise my question. According to you, do you think there are as many definitions of blindness in history, or do you think that history allows to precise the definition and that scientists will be able to define a common definition? Or do you think that the gap that exists between the real world and the standards only express the inability of science, of sight and blindness? And which other definition of blindness do you think are relevant? That's it.
Thank you for having summarized my talk so accurately and for your question. One of the comments that you made on the fact that blindness is considered as a pathological condition That's very interesting because, for instance, while I was preparing for this talk, I was reading 19th century medical dictionaries after 1812 until 1918. I found that the definitions were not at all there were a lot of doctors who were already saying that blindness is not a disease, it is the consequence of a disease, but it is not a disease in and of itself. And others were saying, no, it is a pathology. It is a pathological condition of the eye that is abnormal, etc. This was a question that, as far as I am concerned, it is interesting to continue to discuss. And it is not limited to blindness, is it? We could ask the same question about other situations that are defined as situations of disability. As for the definition of blindness, two things to be said. The reason why I proposed this topic or this lecture is that, in my view, in the context of what has been published regarding blindness, we do not often find writers who can define the terms, the usable terms, the terms that they use. And we continue to talk about blindness as if it were commonly agreed knowledge, as if everybody had the same idea of it. That is not at all the case. The second question is, as a researcher, interested in disability studies, do we need an accurate and universal definition? This is the difficulty of giving a definition. Why? Because it's obvious in context of health protocols, a quantitative definition of a deficiency of one or another, of one kind or another, is functional. This results in a certain number of people in society are not adapted to society, can then enjoy the same rights as most people. The question is, as a researcher in the context of blindness studies, how do we want to define blindness, and do we need a definition, a universal definition of this condition? It is a debate that I'm not sure we've reached the end of. This has not yet been carried out in an exhaustive fashion, and I believe that it is a question that I would like very much so to discuss this with the other colleagues and hear what they have to say about this. We are going to be able to do this straight away, and we're going to be able to examine whether blindness studies can actually take the pattern that sort of model of a deaf studies that agreed on a definition of deafness in order to reach a comprehension, a more global comprehension and understanding culturally, and that will include the different dimensions of people's experience. Thank you again. I'm going to hand over to Hannah. Thank you, Corinne and Marion. And I believe that this idea of a definition of this question of knowing whether we need to define blindness is going to be a key issue of this conference. I would like now to invite anybody who wants to speak to raise your hand virtually. If you have questions, or you can put it in the Google document. I see Vanessa has already raised her hand. So Vanessa, I'm going to hand over to you.
Thank you very much, Hannah. And thank you, Corinne, very much. This is Vanessa Warren speaking. And Corinne, I will ask my question in English and allow our translators to offer support as needed. I am struck, Corinne, by how are speaking about a history of gatherings of people coming together to do the work of definition internationally. And of course, we do that now together, a century later. And partly, I am very engaged by the way in which you offer for us a kind of map of the way in which concerns that shape a culture shape definitions of blindness. So as you reference the rise of industrialization values different kinds of sight and shapes the definition of blindness. And also, I particularly value your references to public education and state-funded education. And I wonder if I could ask you, Corinne, to speak more on the subject of how literacy, the ability to read, versus perhaps numeracy or other cultural measures, such as one's ability to identify visually a duck or a chicken, but how literacy has had such a, it seems to me, dominant role in definitions of blindness more than a century. And as your discussion of eye charts, for example, and their prevalence, you know, indicates, there have been ranges, different varieties, but it seems that the ability to read ink letters in print has dominated so much of the conversation around this effort in medical communities to measure, to define blindness. Could I ask you to talk more about the ability to read and how integral that seems, and whether that is something that we will now see challenged given our different access to, for example, audio and other kind of ranges of cultural support. And thank you, Corinne, again, for your excellent talk.
Thank you. Should I speak in English or in French for my answer?
It is whatever you prefer, Corinne, because okay. I am using the translation function and I will benefit from that. Thank you.
Okay. So thank you for your excellent question. And indeed, it is a fascinating question, a fascinating part of this story. And indeed, it's funny because the very first chart ever designed to measure visual acuity was designed in 1842 by a German physician called Heinrich Küchler. And it was like a chart with three ranges of not letters but words written in Gothic character font, which if you can read, if you don't have any kind of visual issues and you know how to read, it's a challenge by itself to read it. And well, it didn't work out. And the number also of charts that was published in the course of the second half of the 19th century, it's staggering because basically every physician wanted to have his own chart and to sell it. So there was really a market for these devices that were printed like for being like pocket size or to be like a very nice object to display and so on and so forth. But the question if use letters to test the vision of the people. Well, this also was an object of dozens of articles because on the one hand, physicians was arguing that, you need to test, you need to have devices that can test the eyesight of those who cannot read. So it makes no sense to use letters. It makes more sense to use, for example, geometrical figures or dots or whatever. And there was physicians that were arguing that no, letters are the appropriate device, especially because, during the 19th century, in a lot of countries, in the governments started making primary education mandatory and free. So the capacity of reading and writing started becoming not like a capacity proper of a marginal, small percentage of society, but a capacity absolutely widespread. The question of the relationship between literacy and the definition of blindness, well, for what concerns the capacity of the visual capacity, I would say that it's, well, physicians didn't define, didn't consider the literacy as essential for, as a paradigm to use to define blindness. The literacy capacity, it's central to the study of visual impairment, of course, because, when the question, for example, of school myopia started becoming of interest for physicians, the question of, is it good for kids to spend 6 to 8 hours in a small and dark classroom working at a short distance? The answer was, for some physicians was also, we should let the kids do some activities outside or during the springtime and the summertime, study in, in a garden, or having a certain kind of illumination or a certain kind of desks and chairs to be sure that the kid maintains a physiological distance between the book and the eye. We should print school books, textbooks, using a certain kind of font, using a certain kind of paper. They try to really micromanage this aspect. And once again, there is a huge gap between the medical discourse and what really happened in class. Otherwise, for the question of blindness, I would say that it was more the question of using your, like, the capacity of using your vision for working that became a key parameter to be used for defining the difference, for establishing the difference between vision and normal vision, low vision, and blindness. If you can't use your vision, your eyes, for working or for your daily life activities, then the law and the medicine says that this is a condition. And I hope I answer to your question. But thank you once again for asking me about this point.
Thank you, Corinne.
Thank you so much, Corinne. Sorry, Vanessa. I can see we've got some more questions. So I'm going to first of all ask Susan to unmute and ask your question.
I've done it. Yeah. Could you possibly tell me, Corinne, because I'm a Braillist, and given that Louis Braille invented the Braille system, why were the medics so slow to recognise that Braille was existing in the late 19th century, early 20th century, do you think?
Thank you. Thank you for this question, Susan. I would say because, physicians started debating, kept on debating, at least I've seen Well, I know French literature more than English literature on this point, but French ophthalmologists kept on debating well into the 20th century whether or not the blind was a question of their competence. Because they thought, okay, our work ends when a person is no longer able to see. Whatever happens between the normal vision and after the normal vision and before blindness, okay, we can work on it. But the blind is not a patient for a physician because we cannot do anything for this person. And I think that this is can explain the lack of interest from the medical community towards the Braille alphabet.
Thank you, Corinne. That's really interesting. Marion Inc, would you like to ask a question? Hey, Marion. So we're going to go to David Johnson next. David, can you unmute? You've switched your camera on, but you're still muted, David.
Can you hear me now? Perfect. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Hi there. Sorry. Thank you for that. The talk, Kenny. That was wonderful. And my question is about the question of whether a defining blindness, the more complex my realization of what blindness is dawns on me, the more I think that a definition of blindness is harder to pin down, because there's a huge difference between partial blindness and total blindness. And also within partial blindness, there is a huge, massive range of types of partial blindness based on the different types of diseases and the rate at which it happens. So a definition of blindness, if it's going to have any use at all, it's got to reflect that complexity of those two, I think, key states, total blindness and partial blindness. So my point is, yeah, that is it going to be of any use in reflecting that complexity?
Thank you for this this question. I'm not sure I can have a straightforward answer for it, because I agree with the fact that this is definitely something that in the field of blindness studies should be object of an extensive discussion, because on the one hand well, the definition of several different kind of blindness it's very recent in history, and it has been linked to the more extensive and detailed knowledge about the eye conditions and eyes function, and also the definition of what is low vision and visual impairment. There is no such a thing like a universal definition, universal sets of definition on which everybody agree. The point, in my opinion, is what do we expect from this definition? What kind of use we Why do we need this kind of definitions?
Yeah, and I guess it's not just about the quantity, is it? It's not about it's the quality of the vision that's also, or the lack of vision that's important to capture. And how can you that's really hard to define.
Absolutely, but it is also depends the definition of it's one point and what are the consequences of it, because for example, I assume that if I were a farmer in Italy in the 15th century, besides, I probably would not, will be dead by now because the life expectancy was very low at the time.
Yeah.
And I had like 15 kids. But I would not be bored, by not having the capacity of a 2020 vision, because for my daily life, this kind of visual performance was not required. This is not the case nowadays, where we live in an environment in which not just our visual capacity is overstimulated, but in which visual proficiency is almost mandatory, taken for granted. So it's also a situation which is quite fluidic, because it depends so much from the environment, besides depending on from the individual, and it changes at a pace which is it's evolving at a pace which is quite very rapid.
Thank you, Corinne. Thank you, David. I should say that David is speaking tomorrow, and he's definitely, in fact, the whole of the round table tomorrow about blindness and art, it has in common a kind of a return to these questions. Let's see if Marion Inc. Sema.
Can you hear me? Yes, it does work. Thank you. Thank you very much for the presentation. I have a question. How can we, when we compute the sight, people focus on the central vision? I suffer from retinopathy, which affects central vision. So I'm legally recognized and registered blind. Having said that, I can, you know, do lots of things in my daily life. I can walk, move around. But in the history of ophthalmology, would you say that people have been focusing mainly on central vision? Thank you for that question. Indeed, the notion, the concept of peripheral vision was introduced more recently, in the 20th century, actually, because the assessment of central vision was the sole type of assessment being made for many years, except for a few cases. In the forces, in the armies, peripheral vision was assessed, tested for pilots, plane pilots. And peripheral vision was tested for armed forces officers, even at the end of the 19th century, whereas that was not the case for most people. So this concept of peripheral vision was introduced for most people in the second part of the 20th century as an important point to consider, really. Thank you very much, Corinne. I think we have 5 minutes to go, so I shall leave the floor to Anaïs Chollet now. Anaïs, the floor is yours. If Anaïs is not here,
that this whole discussion of medical definitions makes me quite uneasy, because I believe in a demedicalized model of disability. I'm against the medical model of disability and in favor of a more kind of cultural, creative definition. How do you reconcile your study of medical issues with critical disability studies and an anti-medical model?
Thank you. Thank you, Anna. This is an excellent question. You you mentioned a very problematic point, because I do believe I am on the same page with you. And sometimes I'm quite frustrated by reading about this kind of obsessional way in which physicians have approached and keep on approaching the question of visual acuity, visual impairment, and blindness. I do believe that human vision is I do believe that visual capacity, that the eye, it's an optical device, and our brain plays a major role in our capacity of vision, that varies during the day, varies depending on our emotional status, varies depending on how our general status of health, and so on and so forth. And I do not agree with people that I study. At the same time, I would consider it is a way of framing the questions about the vision that we cannot ignore, because it keeps on being a framework on which a huge part of the society rely on. That is accepted by a huge part of society, basically acritically. So, in my opinion, studying the question of medicalization and medical definitions from a historical viewpoint, and explaining how and why this kind of ways of understanding human vision is the way that is the way we have to deal with. Means bring a certain awareness on among the scientific community, and in the first place, hopefully a broader public. But otherwise, I completely agree with your point. Absolutely.
Thank you. I think we're going to come back to this again and again throughout the conference. It's one of the main issues. We've just got time for one very quick comment from David Anderson. If you're quick, David.
Thank you so much. I just wanted to say thank you for the talk, and so interested. I was just curious if, and maybe something we can talk about during the conference, but I was so interested how we talked a lot about pathology, but it made me think, what is the difference between blindness that comes through violence? And also, what is the difference between different kinds of blindnesses when there is no original loss, like it's not progressive, you are born with it, that sort of thing. I realize we don't have time maybe to answer that question, but just wanted to say thank you, and I hope to continue conversations with you. I learned a lot from your talk. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Corinne, I'm going to not let you answer, just because we have to be very strict with time, because we need to give the interpreters and the people who are doing the transcription a break. Everyone needs a break. Please join us in 15 minutes when we will be discussing the very, very relevant topic of different languages of blindness with Kish Alam and Selena Mills. Thank you very much, everybody, and thank you especially, Corinne.